This is lesson number 37 in the book of Judges, and it is our last lesson in the book of Judges. Now, we're in chapter 21, and I want you to open your Bible there because we have some things we want to refresh ourselves in our memory of. Now, I want us to review the dilemma that we were facing with the nation of Israel as we ended the last lesson. There were 600 men left of the tribe of Benjamin. No women, no wives, no daughters, no sons. 600 men soldiers. All the rest of the tribe of Benjamin had been destroyed, had been killed in the battle to erase the sin of standing up and not doing what was right with those worthless men in Gibeah, as they were asked to do. So the vow was made that none of their daughters would be given to the Benjamites for wives. So the question is where would they get daughters, women, for these 600 remaining men? Because if they didn't give these 600 remaining men wives, then the nation or the tribal area, the tribe of Benjamin, upon the deaths of those 600 men, would die. And there would not be 12 tribes. So the vow was made that women cannot be given from the Jewish families. So at Shiloh, the virgin daughters of Shiloh, they knew, would come out and take part in these dances. But Shiloh, as I have told you, was not a town as such. Now, it's going to become a town after the Ark of the Covenant and the temple complex, of the tabernacle complex, leaves there. It's going to become a town. So you can find ruins there now. But at the time of this story, Shiloh is where the tent of the tabernacle is and the tabernacle complex. And everyone lives in tents there. Even the Levites and the priests live there in tents. And anyone coming to worship the three times of the year brought their own tents and placed them around the tabernacle and lived there. So they knew that at Shiloh, virgin daughters would come out whenever they would hear the music playing there during the festivals, and they would dance. Shiloh's not a town. So in addition, the writer tells us, if you remember, tells us that it's sitting in the area of the Canaanites. Canaanites were not Israelites. They were not Jews. So if Benjamin's men were going to get wives, they had to be non-Israelite except for one town. They're going to get some from. They're going to kill that town. We've already talked about Jabesh Gilead. They got 400 virgins there. And they're going to bring those, but they're going to be short 200. So if virgin Canaanite women came to the outskirts of the tabernacle complex to dance in the fields when they hear the music, it seems plausible, as I told you last week, that the elders of Israel hit on a workable solution to their dilemma because they had made a vow. They had made a vow in haste. But I must tell you also, it's not a biblical solution, because Canaanites were supposed to be destroyed. However, the Benjamites stole a Canaanite virgin. If the Benjamites stole a Canaanite virgin woman and she converted to the faith, it's evident that the men of Israel, the elders, think, hey, that'll be okay. At least in their minds, it's okay. They've got a workaround that actually is not what the Lord told them to do. For you see, the tribe of Benjamin had been reduced to just 600 men who were at Shiloh. The cry to the Lord of the Israelites was to save the tribe of Benjamin from extinction. Between a rock and a hard place, the possibility of filling 200 spots with Canaanite women who would join the faith would answer their problem and keep the Israelites from breaking their vows. But let us address one more possibility. What if these daughters of Shiloh were Israelite women? What then? Well, the elders had crafted their answer for that problem too. They said that when the fathers came to complain that their daughters were stolen by the Benjamites, the elders would say, "We did not take for each man of Benjamin a wife in battle, nor did you give them to them, else you would now be guilty." Okay, so now they've kind of told us that some of these daughters, at least, may be Israelite daughters who were not given but were stolen. So because they were stolen, you're not guilty. If you gave them, you would be guilty. In other words, the elders of Israel split hairs. No one would give a daughter to the Benjamites. But the Benjamites stole the daughters. Thus all men of Israel kept their vow, and 200 wifeless Benjamites obtained a wife by theft. Whether or not the theft was of Canaanite virgins or of Israelite virgins, it did not matter. It was still theft. And because the Canaanites were living in the area, it may have been a mixture of Canaanite and Israelite virgins who were dancing together in the fields. That is just how lax the nation had become in adhering to the law of the Lord. This kind of thinking will prevail among the Israelites throughout the rest of the Bible that we have and that we hold in our hands. The Israelites will begin to split hairs. It's not God's way of thinking. But as we can recall, it seems to be the way the Israelites thought through the book of Judges. You think about that example of the woman who lost her 1,100 pieces of silver that we just studied in the last few sections. When her son admitted that he had taken that silver, she dedicated it to the Lord, and then she took 200 pieces of that silver to a smith and had it molded into a molten image to be worshipped as a false god. Those two things she did do not go together. But it's just how lax the nation had become in following the Lord and in following the Lord's law. With the wives in tow, the Benjamites then returned to their tribal area and slowly, one baby at a time, starting at least 9 months or more later, they began to rebuild the tribe of Benjamin from just 600 men with 600 new wives. Now the book ends here. Samuel ends it with the words, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." Why in the world did the writer pen these words in this total last section after the death of Samson? The whole purpose of the Lord leading Samuel to write this book was to come to this point. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. The whole book that Samuel has written was about the time when there was no king. Had Samuel not penned this book, had Samuel only written his part of this story, as we will find in the book of 1 Samuel, the Lord's conversation with Samuel in 1 Samuel chapter 8 would not have made any sense whatsoever to us as the readers. We needed the history in the book of Judges to understand. You see, in summary, Samuel began the book of Judges with a review of the sin of Israel's downfall without a leader after the death of Joshua. He told us all that the nation of Israel failed to do, to complete the instruction of the Lord. He then presented a review of the sequence of the sin of Israel's downfall without a leader in six cycles of idolatry. That after the death of Joshua, Israel began to worship false gods, idolatry. Then as promised, the Lord sent foreign nations to oppress the nation of Israel for years. As you will notice, if you go back and review those six cycles, it was just a few years to begin with. And then the years kept getting longer and longer and longer. And finally, during the time of Samson, the Philistines ruled over them for 40 years. And then, in all of them, except for the time of Samson, the Lord sent a judge. And that judge led the people to run those nations out of the country, and the country began living as the nation of Israel, the promised land, again under the judge as leader for a short period of time, and sometimes for a long time. One of the judges, if you remember, ruled for 80 years over the nation of Israel. Two generations of families who had lived and died during his time. And all that began at the death of Joshua. If you remember, during the time of the Philistine, 40 years, Samson was raised up, and Samson brought an end to that oppression. But he also didn't rule on after that. Samuel was in charge after that, but he didn't even mention his name in the book. And with the death of Samson, Samuel was the living judge of Israel at that time. But see, he had not recorded his story yet. He would do that in the book of 1 Samuel. And in that book, he would do, as he has done multiple times in the book of Judges, he would retrace the same timeline in the book of Judges to tell the story of his birth and his life. Just like he did in the book of Ruth, to retrace the same timeline to tell the story of her birth and her marriage. And her grieving over the loss of her husband and the marriage to Boaz. And finally that coming down through Obed and Jesse and to her great-great-grandson David, who's going to be the king. Samuel traces back and circles through the stories to tell us all of that. However, before he wrote the story of his life as an introduction, to press on to talk about the first king of Israel, after the death of Samuel, Samuel took the time to record for us the sway of the great sin of Israel's downfall without a leader in chapters 17 through 21 of the book of Judges. In each case, Samuel stated, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." Well, about 3 years after the death of Samson, and surely within 5 years of his death, the people asked Samuel for a king. And the Lord would direct Samuel to a 30-year-old man who was born during the time of the Philistine oppression. His name will be Saul, and he will become King Saul, Israel's first king. And Samuel will be the one who goes and gets him. And Samuel will be the one who anoints him as king. Israel had failed to accept the Lord as their king. When Joshua died, and Joshua and Moses were both somewhat kings and leaders, but they were not called kings. But when Joshua died, the Lord expected Israel to let him be their king, just as he expects us today to allow us to allow him to be our king. But Israel had failed to accept the Lord as king. They had failed to abide by his covenant. They had failed to abide by his commandments. They had failed to abide by his laws. The fact was clearly presented by Samuel in this entire book of how bad it was without an earthly king and without recognizing the Lord as their king. Therefore, Samuel is making the point for the Lord that an earthly king was needed, not because Samuel could not judge Israel well, but because Israel had rejected the judgment of the Lord as king. I've already read it to you twice, but I'm going to read it to you again. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 7, "They have not rejected you, Samuel, but they have rejected me as king." To end the book, "Within those days there was no king in Israel, for everyone did what was right in his own eyes," is a fitting end to this book. The sentence actually tells us something else about Israel when it says, "Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." The nation had degraded in sin so far that the people did not care about the eyes of the Lord that were looking at them. They did not care about the covenant of the Lord, the commandments of the Lord, the statutes of the Lord, the ordinances of the Lord, the laws of the Lord. They cared only about what they wanted and what they thought was right. They were following their own corrupt passions, the splitting of hairs. They made a vow to not give their daughters. Then they have to steal daughters of Israel in order to split the hairs to make them not guilty. The calling out of the woman to the Lord to dedicate her 1,100 pieces of shekel to the Lord, and yet taking 200 of those to make idols for her son so that he will be happy. And then you saw the result of sin dragging along more sin and enlarging its mouth for more sin to happen. the failure of the nation or the tribal area of Dan and the failure of the tribal area of Ephraim and Manasseh and Zebulun and Naphtali and Asher to rid the country of the Canaanites as they were instructed to do, to kill every one of them, because if they still lived in the land, they would intermarry with them and they would turn their hearts away to false gods. This entire book of Judges is about turning your life over to false gods all the way through it. We also see something else. Samuel did a good job of telling us and showing us how the Lord always keeps His promises. As he said in the beginning of the book, if you will go fight against them, I will fight for you, and you will defeat them. If you do not go fight for yourselves, I will not fight for you. In the beginning of the book. Go kill the Canaanites. But they didn't do it. Well, Samuel has already ordained and placed King Saul on the throne by the time he's writing this book. So after completing this book of Judges, Samuel steps back in time, back into the days before Samson was born, to tell his story. And we will read about that story when we get to the book of 1 Samuel. But my question here is this, as we come to the end of this series of 37 short 27-minute lessons, the question is this: all that we have read in this book of Judges can apply to us today in this godly world in which we live. This godly world, ungodly world of which we go to church and we listen to the Word of God read and we hear the stories. And we claim things for our lives and we even pray to God. But yet, when someone in our families or in our neighborhoods or in our companies or the businesses in which we work are cooking up things in the kitchen that are against God's will, why do we go to that restaurant to eat? If you knew how the sausage was being made and what was put into the sausage, most of you would not ever eat the sausage. If you knew at a restaurant, sometimes at a bad restaurant, of what the cooks were doing to the food in the kitchen, you would never go to the restaurant. If you've ever had a food management license and you've talked to the food managers who teach us and give us our certificates to handle food in the city of Houston, not one of them will ever go eat at a restaurant, because they are the ones who also go do the inspections. And they say, if you knew what was happening in the kitchen, you wouldn't want to eat in the restaurant. What's my point? If you're living with one out of one side of your mouth talking about the Lord Jehovah, and out of the other side of the mouth you're giving idols to your children or even to yourself that are more important to you than God, something's wrong. The sway of the sin, of the same sin in the book of Judges, is on your lives, and something is wrong. But you got to make it right. You've got to turn from your sin. And as in every case of the six cycles in the book of Judges, when the oppression was so great, the people cried out to the Lord for salvation. And the Lord did not disappoint. The Lord answered. And He sent a judge to rid the nation of the great oppression. Our nation is under great oppression from within. Our country is under great oppression from within. Our city is under great oppression from within. And many of our churches are under great oppression from within, but we're also under great oppression from without. The nation of Islam is coming in with a vengeance to take over. And people who do not know the difference as Christians are willing to stand up and say, the God of Islam is the same God of Christianity. The God of Buddha is the same God. He is not the same God. None of those. They're all the false gods. But we're guilty of the same thing. Over in Dubai, in Islam country, three great buildings are being built right now. One to worship Israel. One to be the worship of Judaism, I should say. One to be the worship of Christianity. And worship to be the one of Islam. And yet it's in Islam territory, so therefore a cross cannot be put in the one for Christianity. But they're going to call it the center of the one world religion. That does not make sense. All this is to say, as we read through the book of Judges, make sense of it. Change from your wicked ways. Turn to the Lord. Keep His laws. Keep His commandments. Keep His statutes. Keep His ordinances. And worship Him and only Him. Starting right now.